Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Van Wilbent, and alongside me, as always, is my good friend and not a killer automaton that is walking through a Chuck E. Cheese, Mr. Spencer Williams.
That you know of.
Look, I don't know what you do outside of work hours, but I think at this point I don't want to know. And speaking of not wanting to know, because she's actually showing up for her shift, we have intern Sarah with us today.
Hi again. Why don't you want to know?
You've been busy since you've graduated. We haven't really had you back since then. So let's hope that you didn't lose your mojo. Whatever that was. Okay. Speaking of mojo, we have a great show in stores. We're going to be talking about the recently dropped sequel to the video game adaptation franchise, and that is Five Nights at Freddy's. We'll be talking about all of our thoughts and tips and tricks and everything else to play the game. Oh, wait, we're talking about the movie. And then we'll give you our insight as well. But before we get into that, Spencer, why don't you give us some opening credits?
Tune into brand new episodes each and every week on all your favorite streaming platforms and over our website at filmlosophers.com. Also connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter, Instagram, and Threads at filmlosophy101. Also, we're on Blue Sky at Filmlosophers Podcast.
That's right. We got a website. If you head on over to filmlosophers.com, there we got allegedly over 300 episodes, everything from action, anime, comedy, suspense, thrills and chills, video game adaptations, and the such. If you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to our website at filmlosserspodcast.com. You can also check us out over at wherever podcasts are streaming, and that's iTunes, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, iHeart, and Amazon Music. Tune into your heart's desire on any one of those platforms. Look for us there at The Film Lossers, and give us a follow. If you like what you hear, give us a 5-star review. We've earned it.
We have.
And also, if you have any thoughts about the show, drop them in the towel section down below. We love to read that information because it does help us kind of gear our upcoming episodes. And we'll give you all the rest of the social links at the end of the episode. I have a special surprise for you guys, and that is... We have a game!
We're having a game on an episode about a video game movie?
Yes, yeah, so we're having a game on an episode that we're talking about. It's a turducken, that's right. In the biggest pixelated senses of them all. So, this game is called Know Your Nerdology. No. So, obviously, as we mentioned, we are going to be talking about video game adaptation today. So, with that, I wanted to kind of see where your guys' nerd knowledge was when it came to video games, specifically with certain characters. Obviously, you can have a unique franchise that has names such as Freddy, Chica, Bonnie, all that kind of stuff. But you guys, so I think I can earnestly say that at this table, we're all pretty heavily into video games. Mm-hmm. Amy, unfortunately, doesn't really hit that mark quite as well. No shade to her at all. Not yet, that is. Yeah. But still, we here have played these games. We know the systems. And we've played video games for a good chunk of our life. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you guys. Actually, no, I'm going to tell you guys. I'm going to tell you guys a name from a video game. And I want you to tell me what video game that's from. Now, before you do splurt out the name, I would like for you to use your patented unique buzzer.
Okay.
So whatever that noise is, try not to break our microphones. And yeah. So let me go ahead and set the mood. Okay. Now, this is going to escalate from obviously easy all the way to hard. Now, I'm going to give you a name and then I'm going to give you two options. Okay. Because obviously pulling a name out of nowhere would be difficult as far as escalation.
Yeah, I was about to say, if you pull out the name Mike, there's so many games with just a character.
If I pulled the name Mario, I think that would also be another one. Mm. So I'm going to give you a name, and then I'm going to give you two options. As soon as I say the year of the last one, you are free game to make your noise.
Okay.
Okay? Okay. All right. Question number one. Ganondorf. Is it The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time, 1998, or Kid Icarus in 1986?
Ah!
Spencer.
That is Ocarina of Time.
Ocarina of Time is right. There you go. Yes, we have a... We'll put in a cheer in post. All right, question two. That's 1 point for Spencer, 0 for the intern.
I'll keep on my hand. I'll keep track on my hand.
All right, question two. The narrator. Is this The Beginner's Guide in 2015? Or The Stanley Parables in 2013?
Buzzer.
Sarah.
Stanley Parables.
Hey, there you go. Good job. So she's got a point. She's on the board.
Nice job.
Thank you.
She's making waves. There we go. All right. Question three. Vivi Ornatier. Is that Kingdom Hearts in 2002 or Final Fantasy IX in 2000?
Wow.
Spencer.
Well, I mean, technically, I guess you could say Kingdom Hearts. Is that such a hard one because it crosses over? I'm going to go with Kingdom Hearts.
So technically, he didn't start there.
You didn't say start. You said showed up.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, okay. Well, actually.
I'll tell you.
Actually.
Okay, I'll tell you. You know what? Okay, I will give that to you, but it has to be their first appearance in
video. Okay, first appearance.
Yeah.
Oh, first appearance. Okay.
So, all right. We'll give that to Spencer. That's a 2-1.
I don't know why you put in a curveball like that.
I just like making things difficult for myself. All right, next question. Misty. Is this character from Harvest Moon, Friends of Mineral Town from 2003, or Stardew Valley in 2016?
I was not expecting either of those answers.
Sorry, Pokemon wasn't on the list.
I thought Pokemon was on the list.
Yeah, I was expecting to be like, oh, what color?
Blue. Buzzer.
Okay, what is it?
Harvest Moon. Yeah, Harvest Moon. I'm going with Harvest Moon.
I gotta use these buzzards.
Oh, okay. That's the clear indication I got wrong.
No, that was right.
Oh. Yeah, you got it right.
Oh, okay. I heard I gotta use these buzzards. I'm like, dang it.
No, good job. That was right. It was a good
guess.
Lob out there. So what's the scores right now, sir?
It's 2-2.
2-2. All right. And question five? Yeah, I think it's five. No. Yeah,
four.
Question five.
Five. Yes.
Here we go. The character's name is Andrew Ryan. Is this character from Fallout 3 in 2008 or Bioshock in 2007? Spencer.
A Bioshock 2007.
That is... Hold on.
Hooray!
There we go. I got one of these. There we go. There you go. Good job. Score is now 3-2. Spencer's taking the lead, but we still have... five more to go.
So.
All right, we're going to start increasing this difficulty. Here we go. Question six. The character's name is Shodan.
What?
Is this character from System Shock from 1994 or Deus Ex from 2000?
Buzzer.
All right.
Deus Ex.
I can actually use the buzzer.
Yay! I'm the first buzzer.
Sorry, that is incorrect. That was System Shock from 1994. But good try. Still at 3-2.
Mm-hmm.
Let's keep it going with question seven. Oh, that's weird. Question seven. The character's name is Chell. Is this character from Half-Life 2 in 2004, or Portal in 2007.
Portal 2007.
Are you sure?
Yes.
There you go. Yes. I assumed you were going to get that. What is that, 4-2 now?
Yeah, 4-2.
4-2. So, Sarah, you need to get every single one of these right.
You got this, Sarah.
Yes, I got this.
Yes, I got this. All right. Got enough Simpsons going on there. Okay, question 7? 8. 8. Yeah, question 8. The character's name is Frank Horrigan. Is this character from Fallout 2 in 1998 or Wasteland 3 in 2020?
Buzzer! Fallout 2. Hooray!
Hey!
Hey, there we go. She's back on the board with one more. She needs one to tie, two to win. And question 9. The character's name is HK-47. Is this character from Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic in 2003 or Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order in 2019? Okay. Yeah, that was going to make it too easy if it was just one Star Wars game.
Okay. I will go with the first one, which I have completely forgot the name of. Not Fallen Order.
Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic?
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Hooray!
There you go.
I used to play that.
So the score is 5-3. Sarah, this is for you to not lose by 2. Or potentially 3.
Okay.
Here we go. The character's name is Dog. Is this from Portal 2 from 2011 or Half-Life 2 from 2004? Spencer.
Half-Life 2.
Is that your final answer?
Yeah.
Hooray!
And Spencer wins the game.
Good job,
there'll
Sarah.
Be a third one one day.
Well, that was fun, and I'm surprised, actually. Spencer, you got most of these, which, not that I didn't question your ability to know video game knowledge, but some of these I had to look up, like, I'm like, who the heck is this? Wait. But, hey, there you go. Spencer knows his nerdology, and
yeah,
the intern knows some. I'll give you credit. You knew. Hey, you put up a good... What did you lose by? 3?
I lost by 3.
All right. Well, I just thought it would be a really fun opportunity to kind of transition over into something where when we're talking about video games, usually there's always a unique character, but I think it's a character's name. But for a game like Five Nights at Freddy's, what turned into like a regular run-of-the-mill cast of names blew up into like something so much more complex.
Vanessa.
Yes, it got complex into Vanessa, which brings us to our main conversation of the evening, and that is our take on the sequel to the first film, which came out in 2023, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
The first film of the Scott Cawthon video game franchise, and that is Five Nights at Freddy's 2. This has been a movie that a lot of us have been anticipating as far as being fans of the game, seeing the exploration that this game has created within its own universe, as well as within the building of lore outside of the video game and creating the pariah that it became in terms of pretty much building the whole, you know, new subgenre of horror video games in mascot horror. So before I continue further, Spencer, why don't you give us that official synopsis goodness?
1 year has passed since the supernatural nightmare at Freddy Fazbear's Pizza. The stories about what transpired there have been twisted into a campy local legend, inspiring the town's first ever Fazfest. Former security guard Mike and police officer Vanessa have kept the troop from Mike's 11-year-old sister, Abby, concerning the fate of her animatronic friends. But when Abby sneaks out to reconnect with Freddy, Bonnie, Chica, and Foxy, it will set into motion a terrifying series of events revealing dark secrets about the true origin of Freddy's and unleashing a long-forgotten horror hidden away for decades.
That's right. Directed by Emma Tammy and written by Scott Coffin, the film sees Joss Hutcherson, Elizabeth Lail, Piper Rubio, Theodis Crane, and Matthew Lillard reprise their roles from the previous film, with Freddie Carter, Skeet Ulrich, Wayne Knight, McKenna Grace, and Tio Briones joining the cast. Mind you, mentioning Matthew Lillard does not give a spoiler away because he's in the trailers. So, boo-hoo on you for anybody who's going off. A couple key pieces about the film. With a budget of $51 million, this marks the most expensive Blumhouse production to date, surpassing the first Five Nights at Freddy's in 2023, which had a $20 million budget. Like that first Five Nights at Freddy's, Jim Henson's Creature Shop provided the animatronics for this movie, which I think is really cool. Especially when you're looking at, again, a movie that capitalizes on that type of artistic endeavor of, you know, ultimately like creating cosplay, creating those suits. Like, you want an expert hand at that.
Truth.
And then last but not least, this is actually the second film starring both Matthew Lillard and Skeet Ulrich following their initial big horror debut in 1996's Scream. So it's interesting. There's not really a lot of interaction between them in the film, but to see them both kind of in the same world, it's fun, and it leaves a lot of opportunities within, you know, the imagination of the mind, as well as the future of the films, to kind of see where that goes. So obviously this is a fairly new film, so we're not going to dive too much into it, but we are going to talk about a couple of key things that does tend to speak more towards what could possibly be. So again, whenever you're talking about lore, whenever you're talking about a movie like this that has such a huge plethora of information to pull from, it's just only a matter of time where the possibility of spoilers will happen. So spoiler alert, just so you know, you've been warned. So let's talk expectations. This is actually, again, a movie that a lot of us have been anticipating, especially when you talk about video game adaptations. Like, talking about video game adaptations, that is a very touchy subject for a lot of people.
Yep.
You don't ever really want to put too much weight into an upcoming video game adaptation because, much like a scorned lover, you've been burned before.
Mm-hmm. It really ends up being a shock when it's great.
Oh, absolutely. You're in that trauma state of, like, even the little bit of it is like, well, you know, they did this okay. And it's like, but it wasn't a good movie. No, but they did this. And it's like, you're like, it's like a bad abusive relationship.
Yeah.
But the fact is that the first film didn't do too bad. And we did talk about it on an episode. I don't recall what that first episode is, but we do have an intern, hopefully, who will, you know,
I'm running because I was on the episode.
And so with the amount of attention that first film got, and then with the backing of a studio like Blumhouse, it only had the potential to blow up into something even bigger.
And the episode was less than 375.
Less than 375. So, again, this isn't one of those types of movies that you just see it once for the sake of, like, oh, that was okay, whatever. It actually, the first film had some, like, rewatch value to it. There was things that people were getting on the second viewing and third viewing and fourth viewing that was just opening up this particular cinematic world. And so with that in mind, and also with the, you know, with the mindset that we're all video game fans and, you know, having that, you know, scorned kind of relationship with video game adaptations, let's start with Spencer, actually.
Yeah.
As far as, what were some of your expectations going into this film?
Okay, well, he had a pretty good base that had some weird bits in the first movie. So, you know, I thought, like, you know, he had set himself up for, like, pretty much the rest of the franchise. It was going to be pretty much easy street from here, where, like, he could just, like, slowly build up a steam engine and then continue forward.
When you're talking about he, you're talking about
Scott Cawthon. Yeah, sorry. Okay. Of just, like, unveiling his master plan for this movie series. So I was pretty optimistic after the first one that, mm-hmm. you know, shouldn't be too much of a train wreck. Just the normal FNAF train wreck, which is perfectly fine.
Yeah. I mean, that's typically to be expected for most games anyway. Sarah, what about you? What are some of your expectations?
So after the first film, I was like really excited to see where they would go with the story because like I thought they set it up really well. And with having Henson Studios like backing to help you with the animatronics and some of the props, like it made me really happy. And so my expectations were like pretty like base level where I was optimistic and hopeful for seeing what they would do more with this world. So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I think for myself, like when you're talking expectations, the biggest thing for me is the consistency. Like, obviously, the first one, again, the first one, it wasn't stellar, but it was good enough to create the foundation for it. Like, yeah. And so what you're hoping for is like that's you're watching that first film and you're like, okay, this is the bar. It can't go under the bar. It has to keep going above the bar.
Almost, why would it go under the bar?
That's a great question that we should be asking many Hollywood directors and filmmakers. But I think the biggest thing is just making, like, my biggest concern, my biggest expectation was, you know, as much effort and energy that they put into building the lore for the games, I'm hoping that they're willing to put that much energy, effort, and intentionality into whatever story and world building they're doing for the movies. Spencer, it looks like you ate a sour grape.
No, just the way you said that. I was like, you remember that the game, like the problem is these movies are based on a game that came out like a decade ago.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's hard to remember that those games were a mess story-wise.
Oh, because 100%.
Like it start off one way, then the fan community would respond to it, and then you'd be like, "Oh, let me adjust so that people understand."
We're gonna. I mean, let's be completely like full cards on the table. The lore wasn't built until people started building the lore for it.
Yeah,
like 100%. A lot of the things that were going on in that first game had no intentionality until people started putting meaning behind it. People like Markiplier, Jacksepticeye, like a lot of these.
Septiceye.
Well, especially Daco. Remember when MatPat like was able to link it to a real life murder.
Yeah.
Because it was vague enough.
But there's all these people who invested their careers behind like building that out and creating like there's a reason why all these YouTubers have such a unique relationship directly with Scott Cawthon because his wealth, his entire like, I guess, kingdom, if you will, was built upon their minds. You know, they started dreaming up, oh, well, maybe the guy on the phone is this, or maybe this is, maybe the person, the first security night guard is this guy. I'm like, they started giving all the what ifs. Scott took it and just built the world to their imagination, you know, and that's kind of how it goes. We don't really want to put too much emphasis on like, oh, this is mirroring those first couple of games and it's like, oh, masterpiece theater. No, those first couple of games were rough. So like after you get to like after, you know, part three and then you start getting into more world building. But the fact is like we're already in a space where the games have transitioned into not only a higher resolution territory and a more complex territory, but even digress too as well into more mini game type territories and even the fan games that are built on it. So with all that already accessible to people, the expectations for these movies is about right there. People don't think, and I think you really bring up a good point. People aren't thinking that like, oh, that first game, that second game, those were not fully like cohesive games. They were like the mechanics were there, the gist of the whole game was there, but like as far as creating complex story building and world building within those games, not really. So we have to give the space in terms of all that as well, but we'll get more into that after the fact. So we all got a chance to see the movie.
I got to see it specially.
So did me and Spencer. Me and Spencer got to go to a press screening for it. We actually got to see it a day before you did.
We
even have a picture of it on our social pages. Check us out over at Instagram at FilmOSP101. Yeah.
Get that plug. I got a popcorn bucket and then I got the tokens and I got, well, you guys got a poster.
We got in for free.
Yeah, you got me there.
But so we all got a chance to check out the movie, and we obviously saw the film. And let's talk first impressions right outside the gate. Let's start with Sarah. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. That sums it up. It really just for how it was filmed and everyone in the movie, I felt put a great like hand into this world, and it was really good. Like between Matthew Lillard returning, our core cast returning, and seeing the designs for Toy Chica, Toy Bonnie, Toy Freddy, Mangle, and just the set designs, it really made my little nerd heart happy.
There you go.
Yeah.
Spencer, what about you? Did your little nerd heart get happy too?
You sound like a grandma.
Yeah, it did. Okay, yeah, in some places. But really, walking out of the theater, I was like, absolutely classic Scott. Making a movie that like hits all the points if you know what's happening.
But if you don't know what's happening, you don't know what's happening.
Mm.
But yeah, what do you think?
I think this movie was a good movie. I think there's a lot of things that it built upon. I think there's a lot of things that it could still build upon. We'll talk about those things in a bit. But I think overall it was a good effort. I do really want to kind of get into the nitty gritty as far as what you were talking about, because that is a big, hang up for me.
Mm.
And I'm still not too sure on which side I fall on yet.
Mm.
But we'll talk about that in a second. As we dive into the movie, let's kind of look at some of the performers in here. Obviously, we do see the return, like I mentioned, of Joss Hutcherson, you know, PETA, Elizabeth Lail, Piper Rubio, Theodis Crane, and Matthew Lillard. Obviously, Matthew, so full spoiler alert, Matthew Lillard isn't completely a lot in this movie. He's in it just for like a scene or two. But, you know, Josh Hutcherson really does. I don't know if it's all that time watching him pine after Jennifer Lawrence in The Hunger Games, but he played a really like sad person in this one. It always seemed like there was something, and mind you, it fits with the character. It did well. He always had a chip on his shoulder, which I can completely understand, especially after the events of the first film. This only takes place, oddly enough, a year after, which for just a year to happen, and them to create FazFest that quickly, they must not have a lot of things going on in that town.
A very small town.
Yeah, it's a small town. I assume that somehow FazFest is somehow connected to Fazbear Entertainment. Mm. And they're probably some weird revamp into, I don't know, maybe some sort of pizzaplex or something.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be wild.
Wink, wink.
You got put on like the side, like the highway or something, so they drive that way.
As far as like, so everybody did fairly well. I mean, as you expected, the actress who played Vanessa did really well. She, you know, did the.
I'm so curious on what she was told. Like,
yeah.
Because like, she's doing something specific and like, I really want to know.
So I think here's the thing, because the bigger, I guess, issue that we'll have in terms of this conversation, especially when talking about the performances, mm-hmm. is that a lot of the performances through our lenses are tied to the potential character implications True. That they have. So before we talk about characters, let's talk more so about the story. Because I think if we talk about the characters and the performers, we'll kind of get into the weeds of things that we're not really quite there yet.
Okay.
So let's kind of jump into the story as far as this is concerned. The story ultimately, as Spencer stated, obviously Abby has not seen her friends in about a year, ends up getting lured to this other location, the original location, which happens to be being led by a malevolent spirit type entity, and is wanting Abby to help do some pretty bad things to allow them to cause mayhem and whatnot on the town, to put it plainly. Mm. All the while, secrets are afoot with Vanessa and her family, and PETA is still trying to figure out what his heart wants. I mean, that's the gist of it. I think the biggest thing about this movie is a perfect mid-trilogy movie. Mm. Because I don't feel like anything went anywhere, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. That's not a bad thing. It is. This movie did a great job of establishing a lot of the characters that we know and love from the video games, or maybe not love, but have feared from the video games, and have come to recognize in a space where usually we're in control. And now we're watching some other people in control. Now, I will be the first to admit, because I know when it comes to the knowledge that you two have, my knowledge doesn't really compare to as much of the lore as you guys know. I stopped really kind of keeping track of everything after like part four.
Well, honestly, that was the same decision.
Yeah, because after part four, everything went off the rails. I didn't read any of the books. I didn't.
Don't even bring up the book. Well, actually, I have to bring up the books later because I have a theory.
I was going to say.
A FNAF theory?
Not a film theory. But I feel like this particular movie kind of sets up the expectations for what everybody was waiting to happen for the third movie. Now, I want your guys' opinion as far as how the implications of this movie land. Like, obviously, we're looking at the original location in this movie. Mm. Now, in the video game franchise, is there ever a situation? Actually, never mind. I keep forgetting that game.
FNAF 2?
No. Is FNAF 2 at the original location?
How did that go again? It's been a while.
Oh, it's been a while for me too.
Okay, but basically, like, FNAF 1 is at one place, and then I believe FNAF 2 is at a second place. It gets kind of hard to keep track because you realize later on that, like, FNAF 2 happens before FNAF 1, and then, like, the old animatronics from FNAF 2 are actually the ones in 1, and it's all over the place, so it's hard to keep track. It might be the same location, but, like, them being like, oh, yeah, it's over there, like, that kind of also fits in the, yeah, like, the lore.
And keeping it, like, this way. Because you also have the whole thing with later down the line.
Because wasn't Security Breach that location built on the original location?
Yes. Yeah. We got into that.
I'm like, how the heck?
How did you get clearance, one? Okay, like, logistically, how did you get clearance to be like, hey, so we know, like, a lot of people died over here. There was... Because was it five or four?
Money talks.
Because money talks, yeah, and people be talks. Like, hey, but, like, it's either four or five, whichever one has, like, spoiler for the games, they lure all the animatronics to one location.
No, that's Pizzeria Simulator.
That's Pizzeria Simulator? Oh my gosh.
This is exactly what we're talking about. That's sick.
Because with how the fans and the community have laid it out, I just like lump everything in together, like, nearly, to be like, okay, like, they kind of like seamlessly like make it fit, make it make sense.
Honestly, that is the best part of FNAF. It's just the community around it. Yeah. Because it's a whole bunch of people trying to make something make sense to them.
They're like, we saw this thing in the background. Okay, it connects here. We know it does. Like, so pizza. Well, whenever they brought all the animatronics together, most likely right for a Pizzeria Simulator, and have the fire. I still don't know how it got, like, okay, yeah, money.
I think that whole scenario is somewhere else. I think I could be wrong. I'm willing to be wrong on that. Like, but, like,
it's all of us as fans be like, it's somewhere over there. We know it.
Because the main problem with, like, game FNAF, if you will, is that, like, for some insane reason, people are building buildings on top of buildings,
yep,
constantly. And it gets hard to track.
Where's the safety
codes? Yeah. And I'm like, it's been like 10 years. You're not going to have, like, a massive hill that contains two old restaurants and a house. Like, it doesn't make any sense.
The house too is wild, given yeah, so much. Like, yeah, we'll have the house over here too, and we'll underneath, because isn't underneath the Afton's house, or like it's somewhere underneath someone's house? It's sister location for Circus Baby.
Yeah,
we don't talk about that one, but that's my favorite.
It is funny.
Yeah.
Did that answer any question? Because
no,
if you're confused,
nothing, yeah,
that is the proper FNAF experience, yeah, right there.
That's the fan experience right there.
That is...
Just a taste.
Yeah.
I'm just over here wiping the table down as I'm listening. So with all that knowledge said, where do you feel, like, if you're looking at the timeline of the movies versus the timeline of the games in sequential order, not like in the timeline of like date.
Oh, okay.
Where do you think we fit along that timeline right now, currently?
We're off it. Because like this the movie takes place in 2002 and the games are already before that. They're like in the 80s/90s, depending on what when you're
which,
talking about.
Like, I mean, which this game does start in 83.
Oh, yeah, because we have to do the flashback of the birthday party.
My birthday boy.
For?
Evan. Evan Afton, who they write off in the movie.
Did they write him
off? They write, okay, and that's where one of my things comes into play. They wrote.
Hold on, we haven't even, just relax there.
I get me excited.
My gosh.
The birthday boy with the crying child who inhabits Golden Freddy, which it's the bite of 83, not the bite of 87. Bite of 87.
Don't you mean the bite of 82?
83. It's 82 or 83, but.
I thought it was 82.
Well, now we're asking a specific.
No, well, now we're getting specific on dates, and I've just kept it. It says 83.
Oh, okay.
I've kept it specific on remembering that because. The whole Markiplier video meme of, was that the bite of 87? Everyone has immediately lumped in Evan's death at the birthday party as it's the bite of 87. And I love being the, well, actually.
Okay, I have to ask.
Yes.
Who is Evan?
Evan Afton? The other son of William Afton?
So in
last I heard, he had no name.
They gave him the a games. Name.
When did that happen?
My bad.
What? So, that sounds like he's borrowing from the books.
It might be because of the whole security logbook.
Logbook.
That's how we get Cassidy and Fritz and.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Which also like okay quick like goes still on topic side tangent of people making their like theory about how each of the crying children, how each of like our core four died. They're like Fritz went out fighting, and I'm like, they're like, this specific kid hid, this specific kid like did this, and then when you get to Bonnie, or yeah, it's Bonnie, he went out fighting. He's a champion. I'm like, oh, okay.
So. See, this is the problem with the books. It's like a whole bunch of things is happening over there. And then, like, if you're not even paying attention to it, you don't even know.
You're just like, okay, there's these. So, because, like, base level of it, I had to explain it to my Lyft driver home. Like, best experience for me as a fan. Like, horror movie.
So, it says Evan Afton is the main protagonist of Five Nights at Freddy's 4.
Where it takes place at the house where he's having nightmares.
Yes. That's the one where he's constantly trying to leave
when
the house.
When was his name stated in that game? Because this is the first I've ever heard of that. And I've watched that playthrough a lot.
That's a great question. Like Sarah, this is you.
A me question. The thing is, for being in the community, I've always just known them by those names. I haven't really like it's bad on my part that I haven't really been like, well, it's not really confirmed. Like for a person who has the, well, actually, I'm actually... I haven't really like done like the like actual it's in the game. It's said in
okay,
the game.
Okay, so it's just widely accepted. It's not technically in the game.
Yeah. So I started going through it like very quickly. Yeah, people are like, maybe. And like I'm like, that's the whole thing with the crying child. It's like we've never had like concrete confirmation.
We just know that he's an Afton.
Did you are you the one who mentioned Evan Afton in this conversation?
Yeah.
Okay.
Wait.
Just
no, because you brought up the bite takes place. You took. You said that.
Oh,
the
yeah.
Follow,
that it,
like
the earlier, beginning of the movie takes place in 82. Sorry.
Yeah.
So obviously we get that flashback to a random year. Not in the 80s. In the early 80s. But as far as like how it fits within the scope. Okay, so let's put sequential order aside.
Okay.
Let's talk chronologically.
Mm.
Does what we're seeing in the movies fit within the current, I guess, canon lore?
Well, so here's the thing is that like, basically Scott has been like, hey, books and game are their own separate canons, which means the movie is its own separate entity. So yes, by default.
By default.
Yes.
So is there, okay, so, and which canon is this following more so?
Its own.
Okay.
So it's just like,
Blender.
Think of it as like inspired by the game.
Ah, okay.
We
okay.
see things that we like in certain aspects and we're just going to kind of pick and choose like what we want to move forward with.
Yeah,
basically. Which that'll be like, I'll talk about later for like my own opinion and other people's opinion with that pick and choose. Mm.
So it feels like FNAF video games are the canon, the Star Wars canon, and the books are the Legends stories. Or are they technically both canon just in separate universes?
Yeah, more that.
So it's like, it's like the Marvel kind of thing.
But more so that you can sometimes infer things. So like if like a weird thing happened in the games and you're like, I don't get this. Sometimes the books can shed a light onto a topic, but...
But is it technically canon in the games?
Possibly. Maybe. That's where you get.
It's me, Edwin the Mimic. I still don't... Like, things like that where it's, like, in the books and then it slowly just seeps in. Like, it's, like, the weirdest, like, kind of, like rip or crack in, like, the, like, hypothetical universe or multiverse being, like, there's, like, the some aspects of the book can, like, seep into, like, for FNAF Security Breach and the DLC Ruin. I haven't done the Mimic, but, like, some of the, like, two separate universes, like you guys said. Yeah. Sorry, I got off track. With having some of the stuff from games being, like, their own canon and the books being their own canon, but some of the things from the books seeping in to be, like, okay, it makes sense for, like, applying to these, but not everything from the games makes sense to apply to the books. Is very fun as a fan.
Mm. Yeah, no, it's confusing as heck. I kind of assumed coming into the movie universe that he would be like, oh yeah, I'm going to take the best of the both and I'm going to kind of fuse them into a story that makes sense.
Coherent sense.
Yes. And I could have sworn that's what he was going to do before he started.
I thought so too. And now we're here. Not like bad thing.
Now there's a whole third train of thought that comes into this, it's not even, see that's the thing, because it's like, they're not even separate universes. They're the same, like, effort of storytelling going towards the same goals, just in three different ways.
Can I put my opinion on this?
Sure.
It feels like, for Scott Cawthon being a producer, that he's seen what the community has done and building, like, and being basically great success towards him on people investing in his games, investing in the merch, the books. He's taking some of those aspects or specific, like, towards the theorists and being like, here's what is, like, through cinematic, here's kind of what is, like, canon or how to better, like, frame it and narrow it down.
If I hear what you're saying, if what I'm hearing you say, if what I am correctly hearing you say is what I'm trying to say, I'm trying to figure that out. What you're saying is that Scott is ultimately taking all the parts that he wanted to do with what he wished he had wanted to do with the original franchise, the original films, and is starting to build that world that has been inspired by theorists and by fans worldwide into the narrative that is what we are seeing in the films.
Okay, see, I thought that's what he would do.
Yeah.
But he's very specifically is not.
It also kind of feels like he's like shoving down like certain theories that like other people, like people have put out there and be like, so yeah, like.
Give me an example.
The whole Mike Schmidt and Michael Afton are the same person.
Which they should be.
which they should be with the whole theory that it's basically just Michael Afton visiting each of the different locations and he's basically piecing together how do I find my dad? Two, how do I find my sister? Like basically trying to find a means to like some sort of peace, because that's how like it's supposed to have coherent sense into that.
Now, is that video game canon or is that book canon?
That's a video game. I'm not terribly sure about the books. I get a bit iffy there.
I didn't touch the books. That was my own sanity choice.
Oh, yeah, because one of my favorites is book-based. Yeah, the thing when Michael showed up in this game, I was like, in this movie, I was like, no, please don't. Like, this had better be a twist because that's confusing.
So I have a question for you. When he came onto the screen, so when we had our group of paranormal investigators, which has McKenna Grace and Theo, I'm just going to say first name Theo because I can't remember last name. And they're coming through and they're like, yeah, this security guard named Mike, which is supposed to be like our kind of like red herring of, oh, it's our Mike. Mm. Like he said, we could go in. When he came on the screen, did you immediately be like, yeah, that's the Nafton?
I was like, I kind of had written that off as a possibility because we already had a Mike and having two is too big.
It's too much of a confusion.
Yeah. But like the way he was looking, I was like, oh gosh, please no.
They're like, it's this guy. So for me personally, when I was sitting in the theaters and I avoided spoilers like the plague, as soon as I saw him come onto camera, I'm like, he looks like how day one FNAF fans have drawn Michael Afton. I'm like, yep, perfect casting. Good job, guys.
But like, regular Michael Afton's not a bad guy.
Huh?
Regular Michael Afton from the games.
From the games? No. Wait.
What?
Huh? Okay, I think we're on two separate parts of the fan. Because from my point of view, for games, he's kind of just doing it for himself and for basically his own fulfillment of peace, given he was responsible for his brother.
Yeah.
The crying child.
Yeah, he was a bad guy kid. Yeah, yeah, cool.
But he's working through going to the other locations to basically try to like find some way to free the other spirits and like get some sort of peace and also finding his dad.
Yeah.
So overall, he's a bad guy?
No, I'm saying he's not.
Oh, it sounded like you were saying
he was the bad guy in the games. Okay. Thank you for the clarification. Because I was like, hold up. I think we're on two separate paths. Because like in the movie.
Yeah. Okay.
And that's where some of my issues kind of lie. Is for in the movies, the path. And we'll get into that later.
No, we can get into that. Go ahead.
With the pathway that they have specifically for Michael.
Which Michael?
For Afton. So I'm just going to go by Afton because we have...
Well, no, because you have three Aftons technically in this one.
Yeah.
So you need
four. Okay, okay.
So when it comes to Michael Afton, non-sister location.
Michael Afton.
Location.
We're talking about the movie, so it doesn't matter about sister location.
I love sister location.
It's so really great.
When it comes to movie adaptation, Michael Afton, they decided to go down the pathway of him being so closely, let me follow in the footsteps of my father, that for me, I'm like, okay, like if I take away like my upbringing personally for the FNAF fandom and how I got into it, I'd be like, okay, as a viewer, I'm like, okay, we have an evil brother, I guess. Okay, cool. But as a fan, I'm like, oh, okay. So are we going to next movie come to find out that upon like Vanessa and Michael Afton's, like childhood, they were kind of pitted against each other, which is another thing. Oh my gosh, with the flashback scenes with Vanessa and having our lovely, lovely Matthew Lillard as William Afton be like, you are mine. You're my favorite. Like there's so many like people having theories about that like, ooh.
Yeah, he did say that, didn't he?
He said it a lot.
That's interesting considering like the games and how that's kind of a flip of how like Elizabeth was like, oh, this one's my favorite. Yeah, I think a lot of that complaint is from really what the movie is doing of like it's trading jobs. Everyone's trading
exactly.
jobs.
Exactly.
Oh, and it's kind of crazy.
Like they're filling space and they're making sure that they still kind of hit some markers of like that strong storytelling that the fandom has like gotten into. And like I was talking about with someone, because in the movie our malevolent spirit who's possessing or inhabiting the original location is the marionette, the one Charlotte Emily, who we have in the very beginning of the movie. We come to see how her demise was and basically the backing reason of why she is the way she is and what her motive is. It's completely like a little bit hard turn for her as a character versus the game, because in the games, she still had the, I despise the person who basically took me away. Death is different. Like, they basically, in the games, there is one of the kids who inhabits one of the animatronics, which is Golden Freddy, is half of it. And
don't even bring up the
half of it thing. There is a victim of William Afton named Cassie. And she is the most like angry spirit of them all. And she wants William to like suffer endlessly. And it seems within this movie and with the execution that they're trying to push for the marionette, Charlotte Emily, to basically fill in that space and that void that they kind of have of, yes, all of his previous victims, all the crying children, in some way hate William Afton for what he did, and that they're stuck in the animatronic suits and a kind of limbo of they can't like be freed. But they don't really have like their anchor of like, let's have one person basically be able to enact our revenge and like bring us peace. The marionette, from my knowledge and for how long I've been here, like in the fandom, is she's helping the other kids move on and that they're able to be free. The movie marionette.
Yeah, it's very different.
She's like, I don't give up about anyone. like Vanessa, move. Like, I understood that part. Like, for movie wise, that made sense. But also, you kind of took away, in my opinion, you completely bypassed what we saw, like low glimpse of Charlotte in the beginning, where she saw that little kid get dragged into the back and she's like, I need to help this kid. And we see that happen, and we see her get the little kid out to his parents and everyone after, ooh, that hit hard. Like, I'm sorry, I'm rambling too much onto this, where she asked multiple people for help. She's like, I saw this kid get help. And we're watching from the shot level of a child asking for help and be like, I can't do this on my own, and realizing the people around her who she's meant to ask for help and to be able to come.
Which was a very 80s scene to do.
Very 80s, like, very on brand for FNAF.
I'm surprised nobody was smoking at the same time in that joint. And just like,
a couple of them were drinking.
Yeah, well, they were. Yeah, there was drinking there. I mean, you could drink at a Chuck E. Cheese. So, yeah. So,
yeah, the job shuffling. It's very interesting. It kind of brings a news perspective to things. So speaking about Vanessa and the job shuffling.
Yeah.
So previously I've always said she's two characters smashed together. Mm-hmm. I think she might be three.
Okay. I'd like to hear
now,
this.
Now you're talking about in the movie, or are you talking
in
about
the movie?
Okay. Okay.
I think she's taking on three roles. I think she is, okay, because I have to keep this all track. So she's obviously a nod to the game version of Vanessa.
Yes.
For some reason. Don't quite understand that still. She is also a nod to the game version of Elizabeth Afton.
Yes.
And now this movie makes me think that she might also be a nod to the book version of Charlie, specifically the Fourth Closet. I think she's being fourth closeted. And what I mean by that...
Okay, I was going to say, why don't you explain what the closets are?
Yeah, so... We're just going to get too close. So she's a robot. Yes. That's what my main thing is that she's a robot, because like Elizabeth like gives her a very specific cadence that is bizarre. And so I'm really like hoping she's a robot at the end of this, because like that seems where this is. But basically in a book version of Charlie, she died very young. And so what her dad did was he built a robot version of a child and then made four models of that child just to age up.
Oh, okay.
The robot. So I think that, like, you know, she's probably like the adult version. And then later on, we're going to see that there's like four three other models of her in a closet somewhere.
Mm. I'd like to see that.
Like, that actually be kind of cool.
Which with the previous two for game Vanessa and technically app version of Vanessa, because she started out, her introduction was through the VR chat, the VR app, like the delivery app, right?
Because I didn't do AR.
I didn't do that either. I only know of that because, again, our lovely, lovely community having MatPat and Daco basically walk through and explain. So here's basically what you need to know from this. Here's like where we're going to be basing our theories off of. They have the nods to basically what's going to possibly happen to Vanessa come third, fourth movie, which I'd like to bring up because I think...
Before we get into that, which going back to your theory...
Fourth closet.
You need to put that down because you're over here making a lot of noise. Just chill. So back to your statement, Spencer. Yeah, yeah. Obviously, this is a spoiler, but there is a scene where we do have a moment where Michael and Vanessa are talking at one point, and he does make mention, like, first off, because you're saying that maybe she's a robot.
Yeah.
It would make sense more so in that particular scene if that was the case, because he looks at her, he tells her this is what's her legacy. This is what she was quote unquote made for. Mm. And then when she turns against him, it's like a huge surprise to him, which if you understand computer programming or robot programming, that's not really a thing that they do.
Yeah.
So it does make a lot of sense if that's the route they're going with, that she is a robot of some sorts.
Yeah.
That would be interesting. So what were you saying?
And to add on to his, because of game Vanessa, you have glitch trap and whole Vanny thing. So if she is a robot, it kind of makes it a little bit more easier for playing into the, I don't even know how they could play into the computer virus of William Afton's mind.
But I really hope they don't, because that seems like, I feel like that's going to be stuffing too much into a thing that already has too much.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of what this movie felt like.
Well, and
especially
at
the end.
I think the biggest thing for this particular movie, so I hear everything you guys are saying from a cinematic standpoint.
Because we're a movie podcast.
Yes.
From a cinematic standpoint, all of that would be super difficult to fit into just a 2-hour time frame.
It shows in this movie.
Yes. So as far as like certain characters or whatnot, I can understand choices to pivot. Not to mention, if you're operating under the mindset that this was popular a couple years ago, but is it still popular? And the potential of making another one, like you're going to want to try to fit. It's like what Futurama used to do when they used to like squeeze together whatever they had and then create a series finale just in case they weren't going to, you know, be renewed. They were trying to create a sense of wrap up with some kind of teasing for what's to be in this particular movie. And I can totally get that. I also can see from the perspective of like from fans who are consistently, you know, following the lore and its development and evolution and watching this movie and saying, wait a second, what about this? What about that? Blah, blah, blah. Like, I hear that, but it's the same mentality you have to take when it comes to the adaptation of a TV series, the adaptation of a book, the adaptation of anything, a comic book. You know, you can't, like, again, and I use this story quite often. Spencer, you and I, we had a friend way, way back who had gone to go see the first Hunger Games movie, and her name was Camille. And Camille had gone to go see that movie, the first one, and she had read the book prior to. She's a very particular person. But she read the book first, and right after watching the movie, she had gone with a group of people. They asked her what she thought, and she goes, it was okay, but there was no lamb soup. Like, there was, like, and there's mentioned in the first Hunger Games book of this, like, lamb plum stew or whatever. And she was a big foodie, so she was looking forward to seeing that, and it never came up in the movie. And it kind of was a big deal because it's the same soup that they have on the train in the beginning of the movie. And then it's also like airdropped to them in the middle of the game later on in the film or in the story. So not having it was an interesting choice, but it wasn't there. But the fact is, like, that's what they fixated on. Like, there is no lamb plum soup or whatever it's called. There was, you know, no soup. If every opportunity there was to make every fan happy was taken, I think these movies would be a lot more complex and difficult for everyone else to follow. And I think that goes back to the first thing you mentioned at the beginning, Spencer, about how these stories can easily, and obviously just in what we talked about right now, like my head spinning, my eyeballs are like rolling to the back of my head and I'm trying to make sense of any of that. Like, there's a lot to this. And to create a sense of cohesion with giving everybody a consistent story that has the feasibility for continuation, and B, trying to make everyone as docile and somewhat satisfied as possible, including the producers and the people who are funding the movie, that is like that's a difficult juggling act. So I can definitely see, like, on both sides of that coin. I see where your guys' frustrations are, but I also can see from their perspective as well, this is what they could make.
Yeah, but like, I feel like the answer to that is just simplify it. Like, separate Vanessa and Elizabeth into two separate characters again, but then have like Vanessa around so that like William Afton notices her and like, oh, maybe I could use you for something later.
I mean, technically there's the only people who know of her value, Elizabeth Afton's value, are the people who know the games well.
True.
And the people who don't know this storyline are like, oh, her mom's dead. She's got nobody. So sad. And it's like, so then you create sympathy for the character. So now you equate someone who's gone through emotional turmoil as a sympathetic character who, when that, if ever, you know, crazy turn happens, it's like, oh, not Vanessa, you know, kind of thing.
Our sweet baby, no.
But again, like there's elements, and it goes back to, I think you and I mentioned this before, or it might've been Sarah and I, one of you two mentioned it. We had the conversation about like how this could easily, but it hasn't yet, but it could easily slip into that problem that the DCEU had.
Oh yeah.
Where most of their, so I guess it was with Sarah.
Yeah.
Where most of the content they were previously putting out as far as major motion pictures required you to have some sense of reading to fully grasp all of the great aspects they were trying to get people to recognize. The scene from, you know, the Dark Knight Returns, you know, the one panel that's so iconic that only a few people recognize right away. There are certain elements, like a lot of those pieces only certain people got. And so everybody else who didn't get it, they were the like outsiders, like everybody who was like a hardcore DC fan. And I don't think you were on that show, but Chad and I had a conversation with somebody who, I think when BVS came out, might have been BVS or Justice League. No, it was BVS. Mm. When BVS came out, and they were like, no, you don't get it. Like, you have to watch this one and that one, and you have to watch this cartoon
doing too much already.
And then you'll fully get like exactly how awesome and amazing the scene is. And I'm like, that's too much homework.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's one of the things that this movie's trying to do. It's trying to create that bridge for the people who obviously know all the homework and the brand new people who are like, oh, cool, Killer Chucky from Chuck E. Cheese. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
I was gonna put like the whole kind of, it's not like canon event, but FNAF was never supposed to be a like kids related, like having 5-7 year olds being like, oh my gosh, Freddy Fazbear. The like capitalistic and like marketing to children when this movie is like a like going against evil corporations and, hey, you're not always safe, and the horrors of like the first couple games, like while they were not like very story driven, they would still mess up like little kids. So the other thing is for Blumhouse having it PG-13 and having it like as a concept and a story, having it being taken serious with I'm going off track.
No. It's I like your train of thought. Go ahead and keep going.
Of basically well, catering to the fans, but also to
making it accessible to younger audiences.
So yeah, making it very accessible to, well, making accessible to of age at least 13-year-old kids, and still maintaining the sense of terrifying, of spookiness, while not being goofy, haha, oh, their children's animatronics come to life at this pizza place, like actually taking into consideration the seriousness and the loss of innocence that you have. And it, and it's a really weird balance, because while like you said, in making this adaptation, you have that weird balance of making sure that you want to meet with where the fans and the people who've been there since day one, or this is their childhood, and not disappointing them, but also being coming face to face with, also you have parents and families who like their kids into it, and they have next to nothing. So it's it's like killer Chuck E. Cheese. You have that really weird balance of trying to get people to just see this as a movie and not as a kind of doorway into, like, bringing people into the, into the fandom and why they should invest because of this, like, movie. It's a really weird thing. Sorry, I'm just kind of spitballing.
I think what I was trying to say by simplification is that I know too much.
That you
and
do.
I was uncertain.
You are burdened with knowledge, my friend.
As is my whatever.
except when it comes to words.
I guess coming out of this, I was really concerned with how approachable this movie is.
Yeah.
But now I'm uncertain because, like, I know too much. Maybe people are perfectly fine with, you know, Vanessa being really just odd. And like Abby having an unusual name and Mike being there. So like that's the only thing I don't really know from my own perspective, is how does someone who knows absolutely nothing approach this? Usually I have a pretty good gauge, but like I think I just have too much.
I can help you with that, because
our thermometer.
My knowledge of the lore of it has been I've seen pretty much just about every MatPat video, but I haven't retained any of it. Yeah. So there's nothing stuck up here. Pointing to my brain. There's nothing stuck up here at all in terms of, you know, backdated logs and knowledge of information based on this video game and how deep the lore goes. Mm. The approachability of this is kind of universal at this point. Mm. I think what Blumhouse and Scott Cawthon and Emma Tammy.
Yeah.
What they have done is build upon something that is being re-promoted consistently, either by Universal Studios, through the video game outlets, because they're still creating more and more video games, and by the streamers that have perpetuated this unique pariah of a franchise and the fan games that have been birthed since then. I think like a lot of these young people who know who Markiplier is, who knows like of MatPat and his game theories, who knows of like every single streamer out there who tests their mettle on, you know, the first few Five Nights at Freddy's games, like they recognize the legacy this game has had without so much as knowing like how much effort there's been to build a lore, and or even if not, like you have the children, everybody here at this table knows I have a nephew who's maybe played one game, probably has only seen his dad play one of the games, but he knows of Freddy Fazbear, he knows of the FNAF crew, like so again I don't know if he's allowed to play those games. I don't know if he knows any of the lore, but I'm pretty sure that if he comes of age, or even knowing his dad, he's probably sent him already to go see it. But like the approachability of it has become so accessible to young people that you think of a PG-13 movie and you're thinking like, oh, Barney, you're thinking like, you're not thinking this is something that holds a certain type of restriction because it's still technically quote unquote PG. Hmm. And again, I'm not knocking anything. I'm not condemning anybody. Actually, I applaud the marketing effort there because they've taken what could have been an absolute brutal of a story, and they've created a version of it that much like the Harry Potter franchise could fill that type of escalation. Whereas I don't know if you recall the first Harry Potter book was like, oh, magic train or whatever, like, you know, all that kind of stuff. Like, it was a very approachable book.
Yeah.
You compare that first book, that first movie, and you compare it to the last one.
Color palettes.
Worlds different. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like, there's death and stabbings and people getting, you know, blasted into other realms and dying. And like, in the first one, and the only thing that the biggest concern in the first film was somebody having a face in the back of their head. Like, yeah, that was the worst of it. You know, I feel like this could be a really unique opportunity. And the fact that the studio that is behind both of those franchises, both the Harry Potter franchise and this one, you know, are kind of a part of the pulling of the strings, they could easily take that route and escalate it. We can easily say that this film was a tad more scary than that first film.
It was.
What's to say that they don't still escalate the next one and the next one and the next one, you know? But from an outside perspective, I can earnestly say this is a smart choice of theirs to make it accessible, because I assure you, my nephew right now is what, 7, 8? Yeah. I don't know. He's like 8. Uh-huh. He's 8 right now. If they do the next movie in about 2 years, 3 years even, he'll be 11. He'll be older. And then the next one after that will be another 2-3 years. He'll be 14. He'll be growing with the story, much like the Harry Potter franchise. So I don't think they're kind of just starting at a pace where this is going to be it every time. I think they're starting at a pace where it's only going to grow in terms of its the ferocity and complexity of the story goes as well. And I'm pretty sure from what I hear from you guys, the story does get more complex past like where the lore was at game 3, game 4.
Yeah.
So
I can agree on that. There's also with a difference between like little kids of this age versus when the first game and like first couple games were coming out when I was little. Because also,
weren't you like 5 when the first game came out?
2014, I was like 7.
Oh, okay, my bad. 2 years off. Mm-hmm. 7. But again, you played your first game at 7, and a lot of these kids who are going to see this, some of them are 7, 8 years old. So
it's also for the community, with a lot of people in the community had been exposed to watching Markiplier, Jacksepticeye, later on Docco and a couple of other FNAF YouTubers play through. You also have the exposure of other people's like additions and hands in of like the Spencer, do you know about the like FNAF tapes where like they made it kind of like found footage style, like the security cam footage of in the pizzeria, and so you got more kind of gritty looks of the animatronics and incidents.
Spencer has this bewildered look on his face.
I don't remember that. There's a lot.
There's a lot of the stuff on the internet when it comes to this. And also with the, it's not even an issue because like it's making money for Scott Cawthon and for the distributors. You have, it's supposed to be scary and a like, not really like a, it's not a, the tale, like I'm trying to find the right word for it, cautionary tale. You have the kind of,
yeah,
like,
don't give your money to Chuck E. Cheese anymore.
Them and their marketing,
where it's supposed to be a slightly cautionary tale and having a fear factor, you have the other side of it where with how well known it is, having little kids be like, haha, it's like the still maintaining them not knowing full details of being exposed like on accident via the internet of, oh no, this kid got shoved in this animatronic. Like the loss, again, I've said the loss of innocence that the grown story that the community has had for how brutal this story is, for quite literally, it's a child, like sums up perfectly. It's a child murderer and the dead kids are possessing the animatronics and it's been stated, they're in pain. Like, and they weren't found. I forgot where it's going with this. Just, I'm glad with them having a PG-13 rating, still meeting some of those like marks and hits of still having its feet of it being a horror movie while being able to kind of still maintain that younger audience.
Okay.
And if they progress it, good on them.
Okay. I have a roundtable question. It's not in the notes, but it's a simple question that I have for you two, mostly because you guys would probably know more than I would. The numbers are doing well. Obviously, there's a lot of there's getting a lot of good reception for this movie, and the critics are saying, you know, really interesting things. So there's ultimately going to be a third film. So with the third film coming, give me one thing that you would like to see the third film explore that we haven't explored yet in these first two movies. I don't know if you guys have that on hand. Let's go ahead and start with Sarah.
Oh, why me? So it'd be really interesting to have it like make it fit within the story, because like we've had like hints and like nods to like very direct nods to this game, but where they would take aspects of the game's sister location, because we saw, am I allowed to say spoiler for one of the flashback scenes?
Sure. Spoiler alert. Go ahead.
Spoiler alert. We see in a flashback with Vanessa in like kind of like an office crawl space of William Afton's Circus Baby. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole bunch of speculations going on with she's already haunted and stuff, but okay. I'd like to see where they could take aspects of that, because they've introduced Michael Afton and we have I nearly called Vanessa Elizabeth. She's technically like, she kind of is. you have both of them existing, and I don't know if it'd be too sudden to have that turn of Michael dealing with some angry animatronics. But I would find it interesting to see if with character development, and if we're going to get more closer look at Michael Afton, if his song kind of changes on his dear papa. Dear Peepa Afton. What do you think?
All right, Spencer, what about you?
Okay. So I think mostly I'm kind of just looking forward to some classic places that we're going to go, especially since the end of this movie sets up directly the beginning of the third game. So I'm interested in seeing Fazbear Frights. But I think if we're talking about like overall what I'd like to see, I think I'd like to see Gregory. He's a character from the future.
Bring him in.
And Vanessa in the games deals with him a lot. So I kind of want to see,
yeah,
because the thing with Gregory is he's a robot. And now I'm just going to be like, is everyone a robot?
That's truly the sister location. Gregory being like, he made me in his own image. And Vanessa being like, excuse me?
I think for myself, just based on the limited knowledge that I do have, but also after watching this movie, I am super excited. And we didn't really talk much about them, but there really wasn't much to say outside of this one particular performer. Skeet Ulrich as Henry Emily. I want to see more of his role being fleshed out. And I want to see how, like, honestly, his performance in the movie, although very short and very small, had a pretty, you know, impactful, you know, it left a pretty impactful, you know, sentiment with me in terms of like what he, how he said it is just his overall performance. And then obviously if you stay towards the tail end of the credits, you do hear more of him in a message that is left that he leaves for Josh Hutcherson's PETA. So I think that would be something that I'd like to see explored more, but I also would love to see, and this is kind of piggybacking a little bit on Spencer's, not so much Gregory, but I want to see them introduce Montgomery
Gator.
I want to see another animatronic brought in, and I want to see something that could potentially give more nightmares, because an animatronic gator sounds like hell to me, and I would love to see that.
Sounds like a fun time for Jim Henson's workshop.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Don't be so excited.
Can I piggyback on your thing? Two things. Skeet Ulrich, yeah, fantastic. His character also has a really great speech in a later game, and I truly hope they give him that speech, because it is fantastic. Okay, it's one of the best things in FNAF.
Like they not saying anything about just being, it would be it to take into consideration, Scott Blumhouse, to have it round out your the movie franchise of ending with that, or like that, like that's the one thing, like story wise, if you can put it in and be like an overlay of like you're seeing like the rest of the characters like go their separate ways and like what they're doing with their lives, and it overlay and you hear Henry's voice, oh, that'd be beautiful. I need that.
That'd be real fantastic. Do that.
That'd be fantastic.
So wrapping this thing up, let's go ahead and go around the table, talk about whether the film passes or fails and how many monocles. We're gonna start with Sarah.
So this movie passes for me. I had a lot of fun, and it was really fun to see the community come together and a lot of people dressed up. Out of monocles, I would give it a solid, I give it a 4 out of 5, just because I agree with there should have been more Skeet. And there was some elements where I felt strongly about it, but I know that with the team that's backing it, they are doing fantastic things. So I'm excited to see where it goes from there.
All right, Spencer.
This movie passes. they're really playing with my emotions because I know too much, but I am trying to calm down and be a good reviewer. But no, this movie's fantastic. It has some fantastic animatronics from Jim Henson. Like, truly, like one of the best things in the film. Mm-hmm. Really great cast. Megan Fox is in this movie, and she
does. Didn't even bring up the vocal cast.
No, we did not.
Gosh.
That's why I'm bringing it up now. Thank Megan you. Fox, I did not expect her to do as well as she did. Mm-hmm. We also had MatPat voicing one of the robots,
which caused by surprise, because a lot of people might there's like, that's MatPat, and I'm like, yeah, he can pitch up his voice.
Yeah, he's done that many times. And then also Kellan Goff, the original Glamrock Freddy,
and then he's Funtime Freddy
as well.
Which, again, okay, a sister location. If they bring in something for that, I'd be so excited.
And he was my only downside to the movie, because they did not use him enough.
So the thing is, people said he's uncredited, but he was one of the background extras for the Faz Fest thingy.
Oh,
he was with Docco. So I was just like, okay, that makes sense. You guys are BFFs, but you could have used you a little bit more
Come on. But yeah, like, and the ending being just a bit rushed, because it's like, okay, movie's over, get out. That's really my rough navigation of this. So I'm going to give it 3.5. It's a good movie. We need to course correct, but it's not overall trash.
Yeah. As far as myself, the film passes for me. Definitely does complete the story for this particular movie, albeit I do agree with Spencer. The ending does seem to be a bit rushed, but with the nature of how this story is already unfolded and then it becoming a much more consumable time frame for it. I mean, if you're going to have kids come to the theater to go see it, you're not going to want them to sit for a whole 2.5 hours. So it makes sense for having it like an hour 40, hour 48, I think. As far as the my monocle score is concerned, this movie definitely was fun. It actually had a lot more jump scares. It had a lot more moments that felt more cinematic than it did video game. And I do appreciate that. I do see that the growth and evolution of the story on the silver screen is giving it the opportunity to breathe a little bit more and stretch outside the realms of what is usually controlled by player one. So as far as my score is concerned, I'm also going to give it a 3.5 out of 5. It definitely did what it set out to do and create the bridge for what's to come, maybe in not so the best of ways, but we have to trust the process. And right now, it seems like a lot of people are trusting the process because people are going in droves to see it in their local theaters, and so should you if you get a chance. But I'm going to wrap this one up with a 3.5 out of 5 monocles. Again, thank you for listening here today with the Film Losters. We actually appreciate everybody who comes through and listens with us. And of course, we would love to hear from you. So drop us a line if you head over to our social pages at facebook.com/philosophers and on Twitter and Instagram and Threads at filmphilosophy101. Over at Instagram is where we post all of our great and other content, such as Spencer's Big Score and Amy's Jane Unseen, which can be found in the only place that ever lives, which is on Jane Unseen and Jane Unseen on Instagram only. Again, we're going to be posting a lot more on social, so check us out. Take a moment to make sure you follow us there so you can see all the cool stuff we'll be posting. We're also on Blue Sky at filmlosperspodcast.social, so check us out there. You can also check us out over at our website at filmlosperspodcast.com. There we got allegedly over 300 episodes, everything from action, anime, comedy, suspense, thrills and chills, video game adaptations. If you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to our website at filmlosperspodcast.com. You can also check us out wherever podcasts are streaming, whether if it's iTunes, Libsyn, Player FM, Audioboom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, iHeart, or Amazon Music. Tune into your heart's desire on any one of those platforms. Look for us there at The Film Losspurs. Give us a like or a subscribe. And if you like what you hear, give us a 5-star review. We've earned it.
Yes, yeah. We have.
If you have your thoughts about the movie, we'd love to hear it too. Did you like the second film? Did you not like it? Did you think the first one was better? Are you excited about the third one? Let us know your thoughts in the towel section. We'd love to read those. And yeah. So again, we want to thank intern Sarah for making her time out of her busy schedule to be a part of this episode.
I always come back.
There you go. And this was a great episode. We had a lot of fun. And so we look forward to seeing you guys again next week. So from all of us here at the Film Losophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm intern Sarah.
Class dismissed.